Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, everyone. It is Sunday night, and that familiar slap of the bass means it's time for the weekend wrap, hosted by myself and Mr. Jabron Clement. Also tonight, we are going to be talking chilling with the champ, with Mr. Layman Brewster, along with our usual guest, Mr. John Scully. So let's get right to the show here. I think we had the champ in the queue now. Good evening, champ. What's going on?
Hey, man, how you doing?
Oh, man, we are doing great. A little wet out here for Cali, especially, as you probably know, man. I mean, you know, we got a little wet back here, but, you know, thank God it's not snow. Before we get going here, how's the weather out in your neighborhood, and how are you doing this fine evening, young man?
I'm doing okay myself, man. The weather's been pretty nice out here, man. It's we got a nice 60-degree weather.
Yeah, well, you know, you know how that goes. When it's hot out here, it's snowing up there. So hey, you know, now it's reversed for a little bit. But we did have some very exciting fights this weekend. Did you get a chance to watch many of them or any of them?
Yes, man, I did. I got to watch the Broner fights. I got to watch the first fight, and that was with Thomas Williams, and then I got to watch the last fight, which was the Broner fight.
Okay. We did have a couple other fights on that we're going to talk about, but we are joined now by the Iceman, Mr. John Scully. Scully, how you doing tonight, man?
Everything's great. How you guys doing?
Oh, man. What's going
great.
On, Scully?
What's up, LB? How you doing? Everything's great.
Hey, man. While I got the two of you here, before we get to talking about some of the fights and whatnot, John, I hear you have another big show coming up in New York. So why don't you talk a little bit about that, some of the guests you're expecting, and, how this opportunity came about.
Right. Well, as you know, I've been doing my reunions, and so I've been putting the word out, and it's a crazy thing. Just networking for me has worked wonders, not just in boxing, but just in everyday life on Facebook and interacting with boxing people. And I have a friend of mine who's actually a cousin of Macho Camacho in New York. And he saw me talking to one of his friends about the reunion. So he told me that there's a guy in Harlem who has a lounge, and they do big on Friday nights. They have huge hip hop crowds, and they have Latino nights. They have the whole nine. And the neighborhood is very well known because that's where Macho Camacho came from. Alex Ramos came from that general area. Mitch Blood Green was from up around that area. So he offered it to me to. He said, bring it to my place. He said, we'd love to have you. Not only won't we charge you anything, but we'll provide the food. So I couldn't really argue, so I said, okay. And we had a big meeting today online. We all got together and talked, and so everybody's a go. I've got, as of right now, I've got Mickey Ward, I've got Junior Jones. I've got Mark Breland. I've got Iron Barkley. Man, who else? Just a bunch of guys. Guys from up around there. Lonnie Bradley, former WBO middleweight champion. I'm expecting a bunch of guys from Hartford. Marlon Starling should be coming. And actually, today they said Pedro Vieira, who's from that area, will come. And he actually split two fights with Marlon Starling back in the 80s, 84 and 86. So they're going to meet for the first time since they fought last in 1986. And I have Lawrence Claybe coming, who's going to meet up with Jose Ortiz, Luis Ortiz, excuse me. They fought each other literally 40 years ago, September of 1977, when they were both about, I'd say, 11 years old, 12 years old maybe. And so it's going to be that kind of event. And this is the first one that I can expect some very good media coverage, strictly because it's New York and because the Triple G fight is that day. So everybody's going to be in town. They're going to want to have something to do in the morning. So I'm expecting a good crowd on both sides. It's March 18th.
Okay. All right. Well, now we're also joined by our co-host, Mr. Jabron Clement. Jabron, what's going on, my man?
Not much, JK. Great weekend of boxing.
Yes, sir. Yes, it was. Scully was talking about this event that he was putting on up there in Harlem, another great reunion that he's putting together, and it's being put together at a lounge up there in Harlem. So, Jabron, you might want to drop by and, you know, meet Mr. Scully and some of the legends of boxing. Scully, is this a free show or what?
Yes, sir. He's actually the guy who's doing it for me, you know, providing the space. He asked me if it would be okay to publicize it. And I said, well, you know, it's your spot, so you're giving it to me for free. So as long as he has room for everyone, you know, fans and the boxers, and he said it shouldn't be a problem. So, but I had already invited Jabron before a few weeks ago. So he's definitely, look, anyone who's in New York affiliated with us and with boxing is definitely invited, 100%.
Most definitely. We seem to have lost Layman. I'm not sure whether, you know, it might be Blog Talk Radio, might be, you know, maybe he needs to charge his phone, but hopefully we'll get him back in before the end of our little 90 minutes here. Gentlemen, we've seen a lot of movement this week, some of it unexpected, some of it we did expect. I guess first, the first thing we might as well talk about is Mr. Charlo has vacated the 154-pound title. That's Jamal, not Jamel. Jamal has vacated the 154 title, which makes this upcoming fight between Mr. Tony Harrison and Mr. Swift Hurd a title bout instead of an elimination title. We had Mr. Hurd on the show not too long ago on the Tuesday show. Jamal, what do you think about this matchup? And, you know, what do you think there's any more on the line now, incentive-wise, you know, now that this is really a title fight instead of just an eliminator?
I thought it was a great fight from the beginning, but now it's a title on the line. Definitely it's more intriguing because it's not just for this fight. It's about the projecting fight going forward, what can be in line for the winner of that fight going forward. So I really think that it was a great move on both parts, as far as Chamalo vacating, going to try to advance his career at a higher weight class as a middleweight, and giving those two guys the opportunity to fight for that title?
Scully, you know, speaking from a fighter's point of view, you know, is there really that much more pressure to perform? Or I mean, you know, I don't think it alters your game plan any, does it? I mean, it's the same opponent in front of you. But you know, what does it do to a fighter's mentality when he goes from, you know, eliminated to championship fight?
Right. Well, you know, it could add a little bit of pressure. But the thing is, especially at that level, you know, I always looked at it, and I'm sure most of those guys do, like every fight is a big fight because and every fight at that point is maybe the biggest fight of your career because it is. Because if you lose it, you blow everything. So whether it's an eliminator or you know, a championship fight or whatever the case may be, a loss is, you know, is devastating to the situation. So, you know, you're literally in a must-win situation. So the pressure is there, you know, regardless. You know, I think the opponent probably dictates how intense it would be. You know, I'd imagine going against Triple G might be a little more intense than going against another guy. But with that on the line, I mean, you're there's no turning back. Like, you've got to win. So whether it's an eliminator or the actual championship fight, or even just in line to get into an eliminator fight, the way it is these days, I mean, you've got to win. So every fight is a must win at that level.
John, I want to talk a little bit about your favorite fighters, Mr. Lomachenko. He's kind of called, you know, a couple guys cowards. Said that they were afraid to face him, you know. And he now has to, his next opponent is Mr. John Sosa. I don't know, you know, I mean, we don't know a lot about Sosa, but the fights that we have seen him in, I mean, he's a very hard puncher, durable guy. But, John, do you see him being able to solve the puzzle of Lomachenko?
I mean, I always assume that a guy will go in at his best. So when I think of Lomachenko, I think of him at his best. And at his best, no, I don't. You know, and I think Jason's a good fighter. I've seen him up close. I've seen him live. He is a good fighter. But, you know, Lomachenko's on a different level. And not just, like, not just that Lomachenko's on a different level, but his movement and his elusiveness and his counterpunching, the way he lets his shots go, that's a whole added dimension that most other guys, you know, don't have. Some guys are very elusive, they're very tricky or whatever, but this guy is all of those things rolled into one. And, you know, he's it's a tough spot to be in his weight class at this moment.
You know, he's already called out, you know, the champions in his division, Gibran. And we've seen how dangerous he is, you know, as John was saying, you know, be it inside, be it outside. I mean, you know, the guy's had over 400 amateur fights. Do you see, you know, how far do you see Lomachenko moving up, or how far would you like to see him move up, Gibran?
I don't see him going past 35. I don't think he would be big and strong enough to handle guys at 140 at this time. Unless, you know, by the time come for him to try to move to 140, that maybe some of the more elite boxers won't be there. But as of today, I can't see him going past 135.
You agree with that, John?
Yeah, and I, you know, to even expand on that, I think that this era of boxing has, you know, it's kind of doing a disservice to these guys, whereas, you know, everyone's always talking about moving up. Like, it's almost like a prerequisite. Like, oh, well, he's good, but he didn't move up. And it's like back in the old days, you know, guys didn't necessarily move up. You know, Hagler didn't move up. A lot of guys didn't move up. They just didn't have the body for it. But now it's almost like, well, he's good, but he never moved up. And I'm not a fan of that, in the sense of, you know, your body pretty much basically stops growing around age 24, give or take. So, you know, anytime you see guys gaining that weight later, it's more a case of, you know, it's our, like I just spoke about on another show when we were talking about Michael Moore, I think it was, and I was saying how it's artificial weight. Chris Bird, we were talking about artificial weight. You know, guys don't necessarily move up, need to move up. I think they do it now much more for business reasons than they do because they actually have to. Like me, like a guy started out as a middleweight. I shouldn't have been 160. I was too heavy for the weight class. But I started out at 60 and ended up at 75, and I moved up in weight only because I just couldn't make the weight anymore. But now guys are actually planning it. They're saying, all right, well, after two or three more fights, then we're going to move up. And if they don't move up, they get criticized for it. I just think it's a disservice, because you can't force the body to gain weight, you know, if it's not time. And Hagler was proof of that. So I think a lot of these guys are gaining what I call artificial weight. They're doing it strictly as a business maneuver. And, you know, I just don't agree with it. I think we're adding a new dimension that's not necessarily a positive for these fighters. You know, they're gaining weight, and it's not what their bodies are, you know, naturally doing. And you're always ultimately going to have problems when you start messing around with the body like that.
Let's not forget, John, that, you know, that these guys are you know, they're prize fighters, you know, and like, you know, Lomachenko was saying, you know, he had two champions, you know, refused to take fights against him, you know, so therefore he moved up. Now he has, you know, other champions trying to avoid him. We have Jamal, you know, that we just talked about, Charlo moving up to 160 because you know, he's not going to be able to get the fights at 154 that he wants, especially when he said that he's not going to fight his brother. We've seen Canelo catch weight. John, I mean, you know, what are guys supposed to do? I mean, you know, they want to feed their family and keep themselves relevant. So, I mean, is this kind of a devil's conundrum here?
Well, that's ideally, that's what I'm saying. Like boxing is becoming that, where these guys are doing unnatural things because that's the way the business is. You know, it's just a different era, it seems to me. I mean, you guys like I just don't really understand the avoiding fights and not fighting certain people. I just this doesn't make sense to me. But it's highlighting the fact that boxing is a business, and more so than most everybody thought. And, you know, because, like, I'll give you an example. Up until even when I was a young adult, I had always kind of thought, like, every fighter in the world in a weight class wanted to fight every other guy in the weight class. And when you were a champion, I thought all the champions wanted to fight the number one guy, and whoever was the number one guy, and then whoever was after him, and whoever was after him. And, you know, obviously as you get older, it's kind of disappointing to see that it's really not like that, you know. And, you know, it's disappointing in a way, because when you look at other sports, now the Yankees, whether they're number one or number 10 in their division, like if they're the best team in the game or they're the worst team in the game, their schedule is set. They're playing whoever is on the schedule, and that's it. If you're the worst team in the league, if you're 0-100, you're still at some point going to get a chance to play the World Series champion. In all the sports, it's like that. You can't. There's no such thing as ducking and dodging in the NBA, NHL, Major League Baseball, NFL. But in boxing, it seems to be the only major sport where they can avoid the competition. And, you know, I just hate it. And I just hate that it is that way. And sometimes, you know, I used to not want to believe that people were scared to fight somebody or, you know, avoiding people. But now you obviously see whether it's fear or, you know, just financially motivated, you know, that's the facts. Like they avoid each other. And it's, you know, it's kind of disappointing to me. You know, I wish it wasn't that way, but it clearly is.
Javon, you know, is this more of if we have to lay fault of blame, is this more of the fault of the promoters than it is the actual fighter himself? I mean, you know, as John was saying, you know, we've always been under the impression that fighters don't duck, but you know, is this possibly, you know, something that's fueled by the promoters, especially those that only have one cash cow, and they want to be kind of, you know, very particular about how they manage his record? Did we lose Jabron?
No, I was muted. Sorry. I was talking. I was muted. No, that's not – I mean, that's part of it. But I think that another thing is that for so many years, decades, that these promoters had so much power and the fighters didn't have the knowledge, where today – the fighters are more knowledgeable. So you can't pull the wool over these guys' eyes when it comes to making a fight. You know, these guys are not going to be so desperate to jump at the first thing. So now they're using their knowledge and making more business decisions than just a legacy, just to say, hey, I'm so courageous. You know, because some of the best warriors in the boxing game to date are some of the brokest fighters or have the most physical problems, and they're broke. So, you know, now guys want to get compensated for their hard work that they're putting in.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I lost Scully here for a minute. Let me get him back. But I do think, you know, it's part of the responsibility of the promoters, because, you know, it is the promoters that make fights. You know, it does seem to me that there are times when, you know, the promoters make sure that their fighters are more or less handled with kid gloves, you know. And speaking of you know, like promoters and how we you know, find out you know, some things you know, seem to fall apart. The last couple of weeks, we've been talking about Mr. Oladipo and Shannon Briggs. But it seems that a purse bid has failed for that. But, you know, then again, you know, we get some of these other, you know, not so action fights, you know, that they get not only sanctioned, but seem to find someone, you know, that'll put in a proper purse bid. John, since you seem that you have the most experience out of this of any of us here, you know, why do you think that purse bid failed? I mean, you know, we're talking about a heavyweight division that has gained in popularity, and we're talking about, you know, a guy that has kept his name in the heavyweight division. You know, you see guys like David Haye and some of the other ones. I'm trying to think of Dominique Brazil comes to mind. You know, a few other fighters. You know, how does it? You know, first of all, you know, when a fight goes to purse bid, I mean, you know, what happens now? The fight is just canceled. Does it go to another purse bid, or does it go to, you know, what's involved in that, John? Do we get Scully back?
Don't look like it, JK.
Mr. Scully.
Lost Scully.
I'm showing him here in the queue. Not really sure what's happened. Let's recall him and see what's up here. Layman has pulled away. He has a family emergency. So let's see. Congratulations to Mr. Laura and his wife. Both of them have received their citizenship papers. Joshua has finally got his visa. Scully, we get you back?
Yes, sir. I'm here.
Okay. Scully, we were talking about Shannon Briggs and Oladipo fight seems to have been derailed since the purse bid failed. After seeing some of the other, you know, duds that we've been forced to watch, you know, through 2016, what do you think, you know, happened here? I mean, you know, Shannon has always provided his best for the crowd and, you know, managed to keep his name, you know, at least in the promoters' mouths. What do you think happened here with Shannon, John?
I mean, to be honest with you, I haven't, you know, read about it extensively. Just, you know, I'm the type I generally wade through all the muck and I just wait till the fight is set and just about ready to go. But, you know, my thing, and I've been saying this for a good year or so, you know, I think Shannon is actually good for the game right now. Like, he's, above all else, he's got people talking. And, you know, in many ways, that's the name of the game. Get people interested. I think he's got a following. I think he's done a masterful job. And, you know, I don't know if he'll win these big fights, but he'll draw. And I'm sure once they get done with the press tours and everything, he'd be a draw. People would watch. And, you know, so me personally, I'd like to see him get a shot. Just if anything, just to draw the spotlight back on that division, you know, in another area. But I don't know the details of, you know, why the fight got called off. I'm not really focused on that. I'm not sure of that.
But the only thing that Dan Raphael has said is that the first bid failed. So, you know, but you know, we also you know, we talk so much about you know, PBC and whatnot. But here it is Tuesday. We're going to be have some fights on public TV, I guess you want to call it, PBC on Fox 41. And, you know, we also are going to have some major fights on the weekend. Even some out in Temecula, there's going to be a couple of fights out here, the championship fights. And then Saturday, we have Deontay, his fight. And we just spoke a little bit about the Tony Jefferson-Jared Hurd fight. John, are you excited and looking forward to these last few months of February? And, you know, it seems like Al Haymon and PBC have more or less come to the rescue for the last 2 weeks of the month. So, John, you know, why are people still being so critical of PBC?
You know, I don't know why, like they're, you know, they've done so many shows, and the televised shows. I really don't know why it gets the hate. I'm not really sure. You know, I don't know much about the business end of it. I don't really read about that. But the fights being on television, and I've told you numerous times, I've been to numerous, you know, 4, 5, 6 shows on PBC, and they were all great shows. I mean, really good shows. So I don't know. I think the only thing with Wilder, and I guess it's not his fault, but you know his opposition, you know, has not been super stellar as of late. You know, I know it's beyond his control if guys get hurt or whatever happens. You know, but he's fought a couple guys here that I've literally never heard of. You know, I don't know about them. I don't know their names. You know, I think, especially when it's the heavyweight champions, I think people kind of subconsciously expect the heavyweight championship fights to all be between, you know, recognizable names. So that's the only thing I can think of as far as that goes. But like I say, as far as PBC goes, I mean, they're doing it. They're doing shows. I mean, they're what other entity has as many shows as they do in the spotlight? You know, you don't see it very often. So I'm a fan of PBC shows right now.
DeBron, you know, we've talked about it many times, but, you know, once again, we see, you know, PBC. We got fights Tuesday night. We got fights Saturday. We got fights Friday. DeBron, well, you know, why are we still criticizing Al? Or, you know, as a boxing fan, you know, we certainly hear a lot of, you know, so-called pundits, you know, kind of, you know, spilling their venom on Al. But why do the fans seem to also embrace the negativity brought forth by the press? Is Al, you know, kind of the Donald Trump of the boxing world, or what? You know, we're all telling what's the new phrase now? Alternative truths.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I haven't really heard fans talk about, I mean, Al Haymon or the PBC, you know, mainly diehard boxing fans, you know, because casual fans don't care about the business side of boxing. That's not something that they're going to be sitting at the barbershop talking about. You know, they just want fights. They just want, this person needs to fight that person. Why is that person ducking this person? You know, they don't get into the specifics and behind the scene things. So, I mean, it's not big chatter in the neighborhood, at the barber shop, at the coffee shop, at the gym. It's not something that they talk about. They're not hard fans.
I'm glad you kind of segued on to a question I have here for John, because, John, you know, DeBron was talking about, you know, the neighborhood barbershop and the coffee shop and whatnot. You know, would you kind of, you know, I know, in, you know, in certain places you have the neighborhood barbershops and whatnot, but it's nothing like it used to be, you know, when back in your day, John, or, you know, even, you know, 20 years ago. John, do you think that, you know, that kind of, neighborhood barbershop friendly conversations, and you know, now you have you know, these super cuts and unisex cuts and whatnot. Do you think that you know, this is, has cut down on the audience? You know, not having that, you know, not just the amateur programs, but they're not having you know, that neighborhood place where, you know, guys can go and talk about boxing and sports. Do you think
you're right? Well, you know, I think back in the day, back in the day, it was a big thing. It's funny, but it's true. Like, if you remember in the movie Coming to America, you know, the famous scene when they're in the barbershop and they're talking about Joe Louis and Rocky Marciano, you know, which is a funny scene, but that's what it's like. And I think it's more prevalent in the African American community, you know, that type of barbershop talk about boxing. You know, I know the barbershops I've always been in, getting my haircut, you know, boxing was never the big thing, but I know, like, Lawrence Claybe, for example, I train Lawrence, and, you know, we're still good friends. He'll be at the reunion as well. And he's always talking about how in the barbershop he goes to in Hartford, they're always arguing about boxing. Like, literally every time he goes there, they're always arguing about the fight. So I think it's very prevalent still, from what I've heard from friends of mine in the African American community. The barbershops, is if you want to talk about boxing or music or you know, current events like that, I think that's the spot. I think it's still very you know, very prevalent. And as a matter of fact, like a lot of times, I think guys in the cities, when they're boxing, they want, like it's an honor to be talked about in the barbershop. You know, and I know, like I say, Claybe, you know, he that's where they argue. That's where they argue for hours in the barbershop on Blue Hills in Hartford. You know, I don't know if nationwide, if it's dropped off, but that's just the way of the world now. You know, like you said, the super cuts, and, you know, it's kind of taken away business and that type of thing. So I don't know. You know, the world is constantly evolving and changing, and, you know, where people are getting their information. So I don't know. Even the newspapers are declining. Like in Hartford, when I was coming up, the Hartford Current, there was so much boxing in the paper. They had a guy named Terry Price. They actually had two or three different reporters, writers who wrote about it, but especially this guy named Terry Price. And within the last 5 or 6 years, all of those guys have literally been bought out by the newspaper, basically forced to retire because there was no place for them at the paper anymore, because I would imagine the internet has taken so much of the business away, and I would imagine it's only a few more years before the newspapers are out of business almost completely. So I think the world is in transition right now, and you know, the barbershop and the newspapers, it might be on its way out as far as how we gain information.
Yeah, you know, just to give you an example, when I moved out here in 2003, you know, you could still get jobs at the Union Tribune and whatnot, and they had a couple of sports interns, and I think they had one boxing writer. And by 2010, they no longer had any interns, they no longer had any boxing, they no longer had a boxing column, you know, as you said, you know, a lot of these newspapers, you know, have found themselves, you know, they can only put out an online paper. You know, I mean, you find that in even some of the, you know, not just in boxing, but the Wall Street Journal, a lot of these publications are no longer featuring boxing. DeBron, you brought the subject up. Do you find that there's a decline, you know, that the decline of the number of, you know, neighborhood barbershops, especially within the African American community, has also, you know, kind of led to the decline of boxing being, you know, part of the major conversation in the neighborhood like it used to be?
Well, after the Mayweather-Pacquiao situation, the barbershop talk has kind of declined. You know, is football and basketball has kind of took over the barbershop talk. But I think it's pretty much, I could just say in the urban areas, ever since Floyd left and nobody really stepped up to the throne to take over the sport. And as of late, we're starting to get fights. But before this year or the middle of last year, we wasn't really getting intriguing, entertaining fights. The fights was being drug out a year to make, 2 years to make. So slowly but surely, it's starting to come back around. Like I said in the past, in my neighborhood, we have a lot of coffee shops and little pubs and barbershops and restaurants that's just opening. They're building up so much. And I have walking by on Tuesdays or Thursday. I'll be walking by, and you'll see plenty of TV screens on with PBC on, you know. So that's really something that can be motivating going towards the future, because, I mean, even when we had Friday Night Fights, I mean, I didn't see a lot of these local businesses having it on like that. So for it to be on in those places, I think is a great thing for boxing going forward.
Yeah, most definitely. Another fight that's, it's been called for. Now they say it's going to happen, but it's going to happen in England instead of over here in the United States. And that's Errol Spence Jr. against Cale Brook. Your thoughts on the fight, and do you think Errol Spence needs a knockout to win this fight? Start with you, Jabron.
It depends, and I'm rooting for Cale Brook. I think he has the boxing skills and ability to beat Spence. But my question that will go all the way up to the fight is, how is he able to come back down to that weight and absorb punches? What will be his punch resistance after dropping all of that weight by going up? Because we saw where Roy put on that muscle and then, 10 months later went back down and fought Tarver. Even though he eked out that win, you could tell that really deteriorated his body and his punch resistance.
Do you agree with that, John?
Yeah, no, 100%. And the thing is, as Cale Brook, look, here's where his problem is going to be. He looked very good physically against Triple G. He looked spectacular. His body was really strong looking. Now, to build that muscle up and then go back down is devastating. People don't realize. They do, but they don't. I mean, and I'll tell you a funny story. Roy Jones fought Tarver the first time, and that was just he eked by, like he was so tired, and he came through in the 11th and the 12th with big heart, but he was obviously not himself. His body was really, really messed up. Now, I have a picture of him and I it was my birthday, so it was July 28th, 2003. I went down to Pensacola to visit, and I went to his house. He has a gym at his house, and I went to his house. We hung out a little while, and we took a picture together. And if you see the picture, you will see, and I even mentioned to him, I said, "Wow, you look big." And I said, "Wow, you look like Herschel Walker," like his body, his neck, and his trap muscles. He looked like Herschel Walker. He looked very thick. Now, at the time, I didn't know he was fighting Tarver in November, so I just said, "Wow, man, you look really good. You look like an NFL running back. You look like Herschel Walker." That was July 28th, so we're talking basically August. So he had August, September, and October
to lose all that muscle. I mean, he was big. On July 28, 2003, he was big, and he was muscled. He was not fat. He was muscled. To lose that muscle in 3 months, 3.5 months, is devastating. Anybody that knows, you know, the body and the physical makeup, physiological makeup, knows that's a recipe for disaster. Now, Kell Brook, not only did he look strong, I don't know if you remember, but they put out some pictures a couple days before the fight with Triple G, and his body, he looked like Mr. America. I mean, his six-pack and his muscles just were ripping, and I was like, wow, this guy looks awesome. Now he's got to lose that weight, plus he's got to come down after taking that abuse, that power, you know, with physical and mental, you know, emotional abuse from that guy, the power that he had to absorb. Now, to go in your first fight after getting abused like that, to go against a guy who is a massive puncher, you know, I think Errol Spence is a huge puncher. I mean, he's very, very physically strong. So I think of all the guys to go in against in your first fight back, not only after that loss, but after losing that weight like he's going to have to do, to go in against Errol Spence, I mean, that's like, if I was a manager, I would say, okay, let's go down the list. All right, there's a couple guys we're not going to fight, and Errol Spence is definitely going to be one of them. But he's one of the guys we're not going to make as our first fight back. So that in itself, I think, is going to be as much of a problem as anything for this guy.
Yeah, a lot. You know, I've always heard you talk about losing that muscle, especially. Another guy that it seems I don't know about you guys, but I think Jabron, you just said that you thought Lomachenko would top off at 135, but now we also have a talented young, I guess he contender. You definitely have to call him a contender. That's at 135 division, and he seems to be doing pretty good. At 135, and I'm talking about one Mr. Robert Easter. Scully, do you see an eventual showdown between these two, or do you think Easter, being a young man, might end up moving up before these two can meet at 135? I think that would be an intriguing match.
Yeah, I would think they would move him up probably before he would make that match. I think he'd be the underdog, and just stylistically, but it's going to be hard to find a guy with the style to beat Lomachenko anyway. So, it's a matter of how the management thinks. You know, do they want to keep him undefeated, or do they want to go for the payday and say, hey, at least we lost to, one of the pound-for-pound best guys. We'll gain the experience from it. So it all depends on the management's thinking and the fighter's willingness. But he is, as I understand it, he's relatively young, and he could realistically move up and wait and maybe hope to have Lomachenko chase him up there and maybe, benefit him to fight it a little bit heavier. The heavier, the better. We'll see. But I'm a big fan of Lomachenko, just his style and his he's almost like a futuristic fighter in some ways. So I'm a big fan of his, and I'm not going to be picking against him anytime soon, I don't think.
John, you and I are probably the only ones on this show that's old enough to remember the original Matrix. But if anybody else was going to get that name, after the way I saw him perform in his last fight, I would definitely call Lomachenko the Matrix.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, let me just say something funny. Like,
Let me just say one thing real quick. I was watching a video of him, his highlights, and the first time I watched this one particular move that he did, I actually thought that they fooled around with the video, that they did something to, like they do in the Jackie Chan movies, to make him, you know, do these impossible movements. And when I watched it again, I realized that they, you know, that was just him. You know, but I thought he, whatever he did, I forget the exact move, but what he did, it looked like they fooled around with the film to make it look unrealistic. But when the more I watched it, I realized it was him. So, yeah, this guy, he's an issue. He's definitely an issue. And just one more thing before I know we were running low on time, but you know, Arthur Beterbiev, I just found out yesterday his fight with the Cuban is going to be in Miami. I don't know if you guys heard that or not.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
yeah, it's going to be in Miami. So, you know, he, I mean, I still think he's favored. You know, but there's obviously a big Cuban base in Miami, so he'll have the fans on his side for sure. But I can't imagine that it's going to make much of a difference.
No. John,
can I ask you about that, about Beterbiev?
What's that?
I've been listening this past week to a lot of different shows and stuff, and they're questioning his chin. Is he a little chinny? Because you know he's subject to punches because he don't move his head a lot.
Right. Well, you know, he went down one time against a guy, Zach Page, or Jeff Page, and it was literally a flash knockdown. He just walked into something and he went down, but he got up right away and he stopped Page like almost immediately right after. I think anytime a guy, I'll say this much, two things. One, anyone, I don't care who it is, anyone gets caught right, they're gonna go down. You know, if they get caught by the right guy. But the other thing is when you're put that momentum in there like Arthur does, you know, he's so intent on coming forward and getting the job done that he's always going to be opening himself up a little bit more than other people. Now, I know Mark Ramsey, his trainer, has been working on it. And I know when I'm up there working with him, I'm always stressing head movement, more, you know, not just coming straight in with no regard for the guys. And, you know, because one thing I think, and a lot of guys, not just Arthur, but a lot of guys that are used to knocking these guys out, they begin to develop a sense of, like, no fear. And you know, they're so focused on getting it done that it doesn't even occur to them that these guys, sooner or later, one of these guys is going to stop and say, you know what, I'm going to go for it. I'm just going to take my chance and let something go. So you're always going to be in that danger zone when you just come in recklessly. So that I know for sure. That's one thing I've talked to Arthur about many, many times. And I know Mark Ramsey is also of a similar mindset as I am. So, I think it's going to be, you know, Arthur's a smart guy, and I think he's taking the advice and working on it. So it shouldn't be a problem. I don't think his chin, the only reason his chin might be an issue is just because his aggression and his desire to get the job done is so high that he runs the risk of running himself into something.
All right. Sounds great, man. I'm excited. Can't wait to see the fight.
Yes, sir. Me too.
John, just to answer your question about the time, we did extend the show to 7:30, but I know you have to go at 7, but so I want to get a couple things before we let you go. Clarissa Shields, you know, being the face of women's boxing, having her first women's main event, being the main event on a Showtime card, John, your thoughts on Clarissa Shields and, women's the steps that women's boxing are taking forward.
You know, it's funny, and it might be unpopular to say, but you know, it is what it is. I mean, I'm a fan of some of the women fighters. You know, I have friends who are women fighters. I trained a female world champion, Elizabeth Mueller, who was a just as hardworking as any male boxer I've ever trained. I just feel like the issue is with women's boxing. You know, you get these, like, a girl will be a champion, and her record will be like, 6-2 or 7-2, and she'll already be a 2-time world champion. And so I think those aspects, when people look at the numbers, and I think for a lot of people, it's still hard to see two women, especially if you see a woman and she gets hurt, she's wobbled, and you know, it's one thing to see Mike Tyson or Roy Jones get hit with a shot and their legs buckle. That's one thing to see. But when you see a woman and their legs buckle, something still just doesn't seem 100%, you know, I don't know what the word is, normal about it. And I think a lot of people have an issue with that. It's going to be hard to make a main event, female fighter be the type where she'll draw huge numbers other than like a curiosity standpoint. But that being said, I mean, I have not seen Clarissa Shields. I met her. Actually, I met her a couple months ago, but I've never seen her actually fight. But everybody tells me she's just unusual. She's not your average girl. I am going to watch her fight. So I am interested in seeing. But I just think on a larger scale, it's going to be difficult to sell women's boxing as the main bout on a major network like that, more than once or twice.
Well, you know, now you really intrigue me here, John, and I got to put my foot in my mouth here, because is this a double standard? Because why is it so hard for boxing fans to accept it, but women are kind of normal being the headliners in MMA. So we don't want to see him get punched in the face with gloves, but it's okay to see him get kicked in the face with a bare foot?
Right. I mean, to be honest with you, I don't know that much about MMA. And I think knowing the MMA people that I know, and I know a lot of them just from the gyms and things, you know, I think it's a different mentality. It's a different kind of crowd than a male crowd. And I think, like, in other words, if you put a fight in Caesar's Palace, Las Vegas, pay-per-view, $49.99, $50, $60, and had it be all women instead of all men, I just can't imagine that the fight, you know, would sell anywhere near what you know, like the male fights, I think, draw between, from what I remember, between say 800,000 and 1.1 million views. I'd be very shocked if an all female card drew that. I just don't think it would sell. Because I go by, you know, I'm around fighters all the time. That's, you know, it's just basically who my friends are and what we do, and I don't know many guys that are like, that know more than one or two female fighters. You know, I don't think anybody could name more than two or three. I mean, even me, I mean, I'm in the game. I know Clarissa Shields, and I know, I guess the girl Holly Holm, I guess I know her. And, I can't think of any other female fighters, to be honest with you.
No, I definitely agree with you on that part. And I mean, even though they're the main event, it's not an all female boxing card, and most
right.
MMA fights are most MMA fights aren't either. But John, hey, before I let you go, man, we have to talk about the big card, starting with Mr. Adrian Broner, but. you know, while the Adrian Broner fight was good, talk about my boy's fight. And I'll admit, I'm a homer. He's one of the first guys that ever gave me an interview in Las Vegas. And I love his trainer, Barry Hunter. I thought the Lamont Peterson fight was, even though we aren't really used to seeing him fight like that, John, I thought that was one of the most entertaining Lamont Peterson fights I've seen in a while. What did you think of Lamont's fight?
I mean, I think Lamont, and I've always thought, since he was an amateur, I've always thought that Lamont was a very good fighter, very talented, and very, you know, rough, like when he wants to be. He can get down and fight. He's a boxer who can fight. Much like his brother. His brother is actually more of a an aggressive type of puncher. More innately, he's an exciting fighter, Anthony Peterson. You know, Lamont has no dog in him. I think he's an exciting fight against anyone at the top level. I think he's right there with him, and you know, I he's one of the guys I would watch, no matter who he fought. So I'm a fan, and I think his trainer is a very good, if not maybe even a little bit underrated. You know, you don't hear as much about Barry as you might maybe are supposed to.
Yeah, most definitely, and of course, you know, Adrian got the nod there in Cincinnati. It was a split decision. The only guy that voted for Mr. Gondanos was the guy from my hometown, the judge Phil Rogers. He's from Youngstown. He was the only one that gave the fight to Mr. Grandaus. John, what did you think about that fight?
You know, I think a draw was fair enough. The reason being, you know, I try to look at it as objectively as possible. And I think, for better or worse, you know, it's his own doing, but Adrian is in a situation where a lot of people want to see him lose, and they're happy when he loses. And I think a fight like that, they're going to automatically say lost. You know, everybody's going to say lost. They're not going to give him credit for the good things he did, because, you know, the fact is they just want him to lose. They just want him to disappear. You know, I think he had a very tough fight. He could have lost that fight. He could have won it by a point. I think a draw is fair. I think a draw is you know, looking at it as objectively as possible. But I think, you know, whether it's a lack of focus or dedication, or just maybe he's not quite as good as his, like, a lot of times when guys are really fast and flashy, they tend to be seen as better than they are sometimes. And I'm not saying that's the case with him, but it could be where the speed and the flash and the talking kind of masks some of his deficiencies. And when he's moved up to the highest levels that of his competition, you know, he's lost a couple. So, I don't know. I mean, I could call it a draw, but I didn't expect a draw going in. That's probably the biggest, most glaring aspect of it is I kind of expected him to win, by kind of a comfortable decision. But again, I think people want him to lose. So they're going to say he lost, even if deep down, maybe they didn't think he did, or they thought it was a draw.
I thought it was a draw, and I would have been satisfied with the draw. But when he came out with a split decision, and he won the decision by such a ridiculous number. I mean, I think the one judge scored the fight 7-3, and there's no.
Yeah.
I mean, I mean, you know, I know it's old as hell, but, you know, Stevie scored it 6-4, you know, so, I mean, you know, for the other guy. But you know, but
he didn't do himself any favors, you know. He didn't do himself any favors. I think, you know, he probably lost fans just because, you know, he didn't back it up. You know, when you want to be like Mayweather and when it's obvious you're trying to copy Mayweather, you know, if you're not going to be like Mayweather in the ring, you know, being like him outside the ring is one thing, but if you're not going to also be like him in the ring and win convincingly, people are going to be that much harder on you. So, you know, I would say his days might be numbered in terms of, you know, his standing in the game, because I think people are starting to see that he's not Mayweather, and he would have been better off just trying to be Adrian Broner than trying to be like the next Mayweather.
Yeah, well, you know, he did make a statement to the fans and everything, you know, afterwards saying, you know, that he's going to change his life and, you know, he intends to be a role model and, you know, the usual things that guys say either when they get out of jail or, you know things haven't went quite the way they could, you know, the usual jailhouse speech, or the one that you tell your wife after she's caught you cheating, you know, baby, it'll never happen. You know, and you got your woman on speed dial. You know,
until the next time it happens.
right. You know. So hey, John, man. You know, glad you could hang out with us for a little bit. I'm gonna hang out the next 25 minutes or so here with Jabron and. But tell you know, we've talked a little bit about your reunion there, so why don't you tell the people a little bit more about that? Anything else that you know you might want to give us a clue into, and then tell people where they can find you on social media.
All right. Well, again, March 18th in Harlem, New York City. My sixth amateur boxing reunion. I'm hoping to get about at least 100 guys to this one, which would be the biggest one yet. Definitely have former champions and Olympians, you know, it's going to be a spectacular event. I'll have plenty of news in the coming weeks as I get closer to it. Yeah, just getting ready to head up to Montreal relatively soon. I'm getting ready actually to head to New York City for the big fights with Keith Thurman and Danny Garcia and Triple G and Danny Jacobs, and then upstate New York with Curtis Stevens, David Lemieux, which I think has the potential to be a dynamic fight. We've definitely in the future we've got to start talking about that one. And anyone that's listening, if you can find me, you'll find me on Twitter and Instagram, Iceman John Scully, and Facebook at John the Iceman Scully. And I look forward to hearing from anyone interested in talking about boxing. I've always got a lot of boxing talk going on, and the more the merrier. Everybody's welcome.
All right, Scully, we'll hope to see you next week or, you know, when the next time you have some free time. So thank you so much, my man. You have a good night.
All right. You guys have a good night. I'll talk to you guys soon.
Okay, Jabron. Looks like me and you are going to hold down these last 20 minutes or so. You know, there's a couple things that I want to go over and talk about. I guess we can start with last night's fights. I thought it was a great card. All of the TV cards I thought were very good. I believe the first one started out with Marcus Brown. I think he definitely, even after they took a point away there in the first round for hitting the guy behind the head, he still went out and took care of his business. I thought he looked very sound. I want to get your thoughts on the Peterson fight before, you know, we move on to talk about anything else.
Peterson looked strong and sharp. You got to give it to David, man. The dude is tough as nails, man. Even though he beat an old Shane still has power, and Shane hit him with some shots. in that fight, and Peterson was hitting him with everything but the kitchen sink. So you got to take your hat off to that guy, man. I want to see him again. He'll definitely be a great stepping stone for guys to stepping up in competition who want to try to be an elite fighter, because he's definitely tough as nails. And Peterson, I think he can give anybody in the division a run for their money. I just think they need to just work on more his punching technique. Sometimes he tends to slap with his punches going forward. But overall, I mean, he's a gym rat, always in shape, ready to go. And I think he got a bright future ahead.
Yeah, I think, Lamont is probably dealing with a window. He's been around for a while. If you want to call somebody a seasoned vet, you definitely have to call Lamont a seasoned veteran. I think a couple fights that he lost, and I put those losses in quotation marks, you know, could have went either way. But, you know, as I said, when I critique him and Barry, they were some of the first people that you know, ever ventured on the show, showed me support. So, you know, to me, he would be in a good fight against a can of noodle soup, you know. So I have to put, you know, those feelings aside when I talk about Lamont. But, he's always been a body puncher. Sometimes I think he may go to the body a little too much. And the one thing that we do know is that, he might have the heart, but he can't hold up against the big guys. But as far as pure boxing skill, pit bull tenacity, you kind of have to give that to Lamont. As far as his opponent, I definitely agree with you, man. This guy was as tough as they come. I think he'll be more than a gatekeeper. I'm not going to say that he'll ever, maybe get in that elite status, or, we'll ever talk about him in a pound-for-pound situation. But, I think he could possibly break the top 15. As you said, this was a great show by Lamont. I don't know if he necessarily ingratiated himself to the promoters where they think he would be a good matchup against the golden boy that is. We'll just have to see.
A big money fight is already brewing, because Khan already said last night that, he wouldn't mind doing a rematch, because remember, they fought before. So, that'll be a money fight for Peterson.
Oh, most definitely. And maybe this time he can get a fair shake, with Khan. I had to, agree with Scully, in some cases, especially when it comes to talking about Adrian Broner. Now, once again, I'm a homer. I'm Northern Ohio. He's Southern Ohio, Cincinnati. I mean, this is a rivalry that goes back as far as New York against New Jersey Golden Gloves. you know, and this is an interstate rival. So, you know, I will admit, you know, I went through the Aaron Pryor era, and, you know, I thought Aaron Pryor had the potential to be one of the greats. But, you know, he was, to me, I call it the syndrome, because it seems to me that everybody that comes out of Cincinnati, they have that Aaron Pryor attitude where I'm going to set the world on fire. But the next thing you know, he gets caught with a gun, you know, he slaps his wife around, you know, just every time you have a chance to put one foot forward, you find a way to put yourself two steps back. Now, as I said, he made a good little speech after that fight. You can kind of tell by my remarks what I thought of it. But Jabron, you know, being in Brooklyn, maybe you can put it in a different perspective. What did you think about Adrian's performance? And we'll get into the score after you talk, you know, you answer this, the first part.
Well, can I just get into this fight, the whole fight? I'm so disappointed in a couple of things. First of all, I'm disappointed in Adrian Broner's team. They did everything in the book to try to take this fight away from this guy. First, it was the weight a week before the fight. Now we're going up to 47. Another thing that was kept on the hush, the fight supposed to have been 12 rounds, but Broner and them wanted it 10 rounds. Now, you got this guy coming to your hometown. Then you get to the weigh-in, and you got some tricked-up scale. The guy stripped down to being naked, and how is the scale saying he weighed the same amount that he did when he had clothes on? So they had to get a new scale. So before walking into that ring, that guy had already been psychologically taken through a roller coaster ride. So for him to come out and perform the way he did and to not let up off Adrian Broner, I take my hat off to him. Number two, the referee he don't need to do any big fights. That was straight home cooking. This guy allowed Adrian Broner to break this guy's nose intentionally. I watched the broadcast on Box Nation, and they showed it in slow-mo. And this guy broke this guy's nose up. And that's why people was wondering, why did he stop boxing? He was doing good on the outside because he couldn't breathe. So he needed to stay on the inside so he can be able to attack Broner body and smother any type of attack that Broner was trying to come on with. Because you know Broner like to try to walk opponents down. So he wasn't trying to allow that. So those are the things that really just disappointed me about that fight. That guy said one thing one time about Broner shoving this guy. He had his elbow, his forearm, and this guy's throat and his nose. And he was initiating majority of the clinches if you go back and watch the fight. Now, going forward, I feel that Adrian Broner is stuck. He can't make 140 pounds, and he can't beat nobody in the top 10 in the welterweight division. And I'm questioning if he can beat anyone in the top 15. I don't even see him beating the likes of a Luis Collazo or a Berto or a Lamont Peterson. So I think he's stuck. And they're going to end up cashing him out, throwing him in a big fight, and he's going to get demolished, and that'll be the end of Adrian Broner.
What did you think about his statement?
His statement was his statement. Okay. If you watch the broadcast carefully, Adrian Broner was popping a lot of junk during the interview, right? Coming off, I win the fight, this and that. But if you notice, Granados was on the other side of the ring, and it seemed like once he heard Broner popping junk, he walked over. If you notice, he walked right in front of him, and the interview wasn't over. Normally, they wait to go to the opponent. You know, the opponent don't be right up in the guy's face while they're talking. They wait till they finish, and then they'll bring him over. But when he walked over there, Broner changed his whole tone, talking about, oh, he's a great elite fighter, he this and that. It was like that showed where his heart was at right there. That showed me his character right there. So I don't respect that speech or whatever he so-called tried to come up with afterwards, because when Granada started calling him out and saying, keeping it real with him, he ain't know what to do. So he was like, well, you know what? Let me just go out on a peaceful note, because he was embarrassed.
Yeah, you know, now, lastly, you know, and I, you know, messaged you right after the fight. You know, as far as I was concerned, Broner had lost that fight. Now, like I said, you know, I'm one of those guys, you know, when it comes to the guys from Cincinnati, I'm super critical. But, you know, I thought, you know, this guy used his superior strength, especially in those closing rounds, especially 8 through 10, pushing Broner around. Like you said, the referee let Broner get away, you know, with most tactics like he does in most fights. Because most of his fights have been in Cincinnati. So I think this was definitely home cooking. I'm hoping, and I know it probably won't happen, I'm hoping to get Mr. Rogers on the show. Like I said, he was the only judge that voted for Granados. So I would like to get him on the show this week. He's in Youngstown. Maybe I can get him through Boom Boom or somebody. But I thought this was definitely a homer decision. And I actually think that if the fight went 12 rounds at 140, like it was originally supposed to be, like you said, I mean, you know, Broner can't pull the whole lot of shady stuff. Now, you know, fortunately, you know, we are a positive show, and, you know, we only try to point out the positives, you know, for the fighters and, you know, their camps. The best I can say here for Adrian Broner, you know, is that I hope for his fans. And it would be for the good of boxing, you know, if he could be the next star, especially out of Ohio. You know, we need a world champ. We have a few minor champs, but nothing spectacular. But I'm also going to shoot to get Mike on the show. Mike Stafford, Adrian's trainer, and of course, you know, Adrian has outgrown us. But I remember when he was small enough to come on the Pugilist Corner, But right now we're about thousands, and he's about billions. So enough said there. Yeah, go ahead.
We had the promoter on a couple of weeks ago of Joe Smith Jr. And I see that it's been a little speed bump in the negotiations with Adonis Stevenson, and it seems like he's saying pretty much it's kind of off. But Box Record is showing that Adonis Stevenson has the fights, have a fight scheduled with TBA next to it in Joe Smith's backyard at Nassau Coliseum. Have you heard anything about that? Or
no, I haven't heard anything about that. As if you remember, you know, we were asking about, you know, whether, yeah, I mean, I know, you know, Nassau Coliseum is one of the hotbeds of boxing, you know, in New York, and you know, I think that they were expecting, like you said, Joe Smith and Adonis Stevens. But you know, once again, I think this is you know, another one of those fights where they might have outpriced themselves, and by that I mean Adonis Stevens, you know, wanting 70% of the gate or something like that. I have no idea, but that's also you know, a possible another chance for us to get a guest on, you know, that actually knows, you know, the inner workings and what's going on with in New York, as well as, you know, maybe being able to update us on, you know, what's happening around the state as far as the insurance, whether the bleeding has stopped, you know, whether, you know, what we can kind of garner after right now, after March of this year, or is there something scheduled in Barclays Center for April?
Not that I know of. Nothing at Barclays in April.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's, possibly we can get him back on to find out where that's going. I was already hoping to, you know, planning to get Joe Smith. And now that, you know, that fight's possibly off, maybe we could get the promoter, his promoter, back on and find out exactly what happened. You know, there's a... let's see. You know, while we're talking about some of, you know, I'm also looking here, February 24th. Is it? Yeah, Quebec City, pay per view. Evander Alvarez against Lucien Boutte. This is a light heavyweight eliminator. Your thoughts?
Something smells fishy. Something smells fishy. Do you know this fight is not VADA tested?
Of course. That's. I mean, that's one of the first things you see beside the boxer's name now, whether, you know, whether or not they're VADA participants. And, you know, I don't know about you, but I'm starting to get very suspicious of any fights that aren't VADA tested, especially since we've seen so many discrepancies here in the last couple months. There actually was a couple other things that I wanted to get to, but... hey, man, we have Tuesday, and we're going to get some a very interesting guest on the Pugilist Corner. Like I said, I'm going to go for the gold and see if we can get Lamont and his team on, at least Barry, and also Tony Stafford, and see what's kind of going on with Adrian and where they want to go from there. So that's going to be at least part of our lineup for Tuesday, Jabron. And Hey, man, why don't you tell everybody your final thoughts for the evening and tell them where they can find you on social media.
Yeah, we had a great weekend of boxing. Look forward to next weekend. We have, Dante Wilder fighting and with a great undercard with Jared Hurd and Tony Harrison with the belt on the line. So please tune in. And you can find me on Facebook, Jabron, J-A-B-R-A-N, Clemens, C-L-E-M-O-N. And that's Facebook. JK, let the fans know where they can find you.
You can find me at West Coast Steeler Fan on Twitter. Also, you can check out the, our Facebook, our Twitter handle on the Sports Crib, and you can always find all of our shows and any relevant news in the boxing world on our Facebook page, The Pugilist Corner. We also have our other sports show, The Sports Crib, on Thursday. So look forward to next week talking to everyone. Jabron and I will be talking to some very interesting sports personalities on Tuesday, and we look forward to your participation and your calls. And we'll be back next week on the Weekend Wrap. So have a great night, everyone. We'll see you next week.